This recording is meant for educational purposes only. Please consult your financial planner, CPA, or attorney for anything that may pertain to your specific situation. Hey everybody, it's Jurjevich here. Another episode of Millennial Manhood. Got something different for you guys. So I'm starting this series within Millennial Manhood called Money Talks. Basically the purpose of Money Talks is going to be I'm going to be interviewing different folks in the finance realm. And I'm also just going to be sharing some ideas, thoughts, and educational pieces that I learned over a decade of being a financial advisor. So as of December 2020, I'm no longer a financial advisor, which allows for me to speak on these topics now because I'm not held to compliance standards anymore that essentially didn't allow for me to speak about these topics on a podcast. But again, what I'm most excited about is, you know, just having the opportunity to share some of the things that I've learned, some of the things that I've seen, some of the things that I've seen that work, some of the things that I've seen that don't work, and just help educate people and help them better understand what their options are out there, how they should go about it, and how to think about money. And I hope you guys enjoy the ride. I hope you guys find it enjoyable and interesting. There's going to be several different episodes coming out on a whole bunch of different topics. So I've already got a whole library planned out. And again, the point of it is to be educational and hopefully you guys find some value in it. And with this very first episode, we cover some topics. Adam did not even know why we were going to record a podcast. And moving forward with all the episodes where I'll be doing the teaching instead of me interviewing, Adam is not going to know what the topic is ahead of time so that he can ask questions that are not prepared, but rather are off the top of the head as they come up for him. So here's the episode. Hope you guys enjoy. Oh, we're not recording. Okay, now we go. You have no idea why I've asked you to do an episode with me.
I have zero idea why I am recording anything ever, but especially today.
Okay, so here's the deal. I am doing a new segment within Millennial Manhood.
Okay.
Now that the shackles of certain oversight organizations with my change in employment are gone, I can talk about money.
You're a free man.
I am a free man. Freedom. I can talk about money. And one of the segments, or not a segment, just a series of shows that I plan on doing now is called Money Talks.
Okay.
Cool. Money Talks. All right. And I'm going to cover all kinds of different topics, conversations. Hopefully if this video recording that we're doing right now works, it's going to be on YouTube as well. It's going to be very educational. My goal is to share everything that I've learned as a financial advisor over the last 10 years with people for free, basically, because I think there's a lot of, when it comes to money, there's a lot of BS out there, just stuff that I disagree with, that I've seen that doesn't work with people, doesn't work in general. And it's going to be a lot of different things I'm going to talk about. I'm going to talk about, you know, today we're going to talk about budget and debt. That's actually the topic that I've got lined up to chat. And the reason I kept you in the dark is I wanted you to just ask off the cuff, like genuine questions as we discuss things, like retirement. Do you want to retire? Retirement plans, life insurance, disability insurance.
What is money?
What is money? Right? Like, what is money? what are stocks? What is the exchange of value that we quantify in money, and how does that impact our lives? You know, so it's going to be episodes that I plan on releasing just on different topics that I think are just going to be really valuable to people in the sense that they're going to be educational, because that's the goal, to teach people and help them understand how to quantify that value that they're creating in the marketplace that is presented to them in the form of money,
yeah,
in the form of a paycheck, savings, et cetera. So I'll stop right there. Again, folks listening, Adam had no idea why we were talking today. So what are some of your thoughts as I'm describing that?
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing I think is probably the biggest challenge is like if you go to, for instance, like the, I forget the exact name of it, but like the financial planning subreddit, like personal finance, I think is what it's called. The first thing you'll see is like, if this is your first time here, click this. And they have this like giant master list because so many people don't even know where to begin. And if you just Google like personal finance or investment or whatever, there's so much bullshit you have to cut through. There's like 5 second sound bites. There's dumb videos. There's articles that are 12 pages or there's that tell you nothing. And then there's an article that's one paragraph that still tells you nothing.
Yep.
And so there's so many different avenues and ways to go that like from somebody who's just like just starting out, or like say you just graduated, or you just hit 30 and you're like, shit, I need to actually start planning for my future. It's really, really hard to pinpoint where to begin. And I think that would probably be probably the coolest thing to see is not just where to begin, but like there's 30 million different things you can do to try to make money. Here's a good place to start. Here's a good place to put your toes in the water.
Yeah, it's not just that, but one of the things that I hate about the let's just use the personal finance subreddit. They basically speak of things as if every single person is just like a monolith. Yeah. And everything is going to work for everyone. And plus, Reddit is like the cesspool of society in a lot of ways. Yeah, so it's not really where I go for advice.
I had the same thought. Because when I first logged on and I clicked on like go here first before you comment or post on anything, it was this massive chart that was like before you ever do anything, you must do these three things. They weren't bad things, but it's like, you really think every single person fits in the exact same box to where they must do X, Y, and Z before they can progress on to other things? That would just seem kind of ridiculous.
Yeah. So in that same vein, a lot of folks just need a place to start. And if that's going to help people take a step in the right direction, then by all means, it's similar to this, what this podcast is going to be. Look, the opinions and thoughts are coming from a place of 10 years of experience. Like the actual financial advising space. So I'm not some random ass posting on Reddit. That's another thing I don't like about Reddit or just any of these forums is like a bunch of random people who, what's your experience? You read some books? Congratulations.
Yeah.
But it is coming from my point of view. Now, that point of view might work for you. That point of view might not work for you. But I want you to have the information. I want you to, you know, just bring you some thoughts and my goal, I mean, I would tell clients when they would hire me as a financial advisor, like in 3 years, I want to be irrelevant to your life. I mean, let's maintain a relationship and I'll keep working with you and I'll, you know, keep offering you solutions to problems and things like that. But if you need me at the same capacity in year five as you did in year one, I didn't do my job. That's part of my beef with like all the financial experts, and I'm using experts in quotations here. It's just enough to keep you addicted forever. You need them forever.
Yeah. Those guys who are like, they come back to you like what, 3 or 4 or 5 times a year. And they're like, all right, what we've been doing is this, but now we're going to go over here and we're going to do this and that. I'm like, listen, like what strategy is a good strategy to like change like that often? I feel like you're just trying to keep my money in a cycle, in a rotation and make a little cut every time you tweak it.
Yep. It's called churning. So let's get into some meat and bones or meat and potatoes. I don't know. It's late.
I don't know what you eat where you're from.
Yeah. Meat and bones. Yeah, the motherland. All right. So one of the big things that I always try, also full disclosure, you were a client of mine.
Yeah.
So one of the things I always talk to clients about was I'm a cash flow guy. How do we create cash flow? Not how do we accumulate a bunch of money? Accumulating a bunch of money is a byproduct of solid cash flow, of solid movement of money, of every dollar having a job description. I tell people, I want you to think the way a bank thinks about their money. You know, so the way banks make money is you give the bank a certain amount of dollars and they pay you a certain amount of interest. Let's say it's 0.5%. That's actually probably generous right now, but let's say it's 0.5%. And then they take your money and they essentially rent it out to somebody at 5% interest. If it's a credit card, it's 21% interest, whatever. So you're being leveraged by the bank from day one. They're essentially landlords to your money and they're renting it out to somebody else. Now, they don't own your money. That's what's interesting. They don't own your money. They control your money, which is a huge differentiator. And if that money just sits there, they're losing money. So if a bank was just accumulating money and saving in a bank savings account of some sort or whatever, they're losing money on that money because they're owing you money on that money. They need that money to move, to essentially be rented out to others, to create a positive arbitrage, which basically just means the difference between what they're paying you and what they're earning on theirs. So they're constantly looking for cash flow. They're constantly looking for how do we keep this money moving and flowing and constantly creating more money for us. I'll stop right there. I'll let you make comments.
I think the thing that this would have been years ago, but I think the thing that I heard once that kind of blew my mind and kind of opened my eyes to the way banks make money was, I forget, I read it somewhere or saw it, but it was like, if everyone who is a member at a bank suddenly said, we're all withdrawing all our money right now. Mm-hmm. Or if one just very wealthy person decided, hey, give me all my money, I'm out, I'm withdrawing it all. The bank would say, hey, we don't even have this money. We can't even give it to you because we don't belong. And you're like, whoa, 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 wait. How do you not have the money that I deposited to you and you've been holding for me? And it's because they've been doing so much other stuff with your money to make money off of your money. And it's like, and it just goes to, you know, we've talked about it before many times. It's like what you can do with your money right now versus just, I don't know, burying it in your yard and sitting on it. There's way more via cash flow that you can do with your money right now in this moment to continually make more money and generate that cash flow.
Correct. So what you just described is called fractional reserve banking. Essentially, a bank can lend out a dollar 10 times. What that means is that's the fraction that they have to withhold in reserve. So as you can imagine, if every single person, it's called a bank run. That's what happened during the Great Depression and in the crash of 29. If everybody went to the bank to get their money, the bank doesn't have the money. The bank is in, you know, my house. I have a mortgage on my house. The bank funded that mortgage and deposited that money into the title company. And then the title company gave it to the builder.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then the builder paid off his loan that he had on the building, et cetera. So it's a constant flow of money. So when the economy is doing really well, there's a strong flow of money. The reason the Fed lowers the interest rates to increase flow is when the economy is getting like slowing down. They make money cheaper to move. Okay. That's the whole objective. Correct. So as money flows, value is created. That's the key thing here. Money is just a quantifier of value created. That's it. If I drive a Toyota Camry, 2019 Toyota Camry, bought it last June in 2019. I paid, I think, like $27,000, $28,000 for it. $28,000. I have to value that car at more than what I paid for it.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Like, That is in essence what I'm doing when I'm giving you money. Not only do I have to value that, but I didn't pay for it cash. I financed it. So I have to value it more than the total payment I'm going to make on it. And that'll be a whole nother conversation, cars, financing, et cetera. Yeah. But anyway, back to the cash flow point. So a lot of times when I would meet with people, they would talk about, they don't know where their money is going. They want a budget, et cetera. So I basically utilized the system over the years. And by the way, none of this, I didn't come up with any of the things I'm going to talk about. They're just things I learned over the years that I just really liked. One of the things that I would say is, okay, Adam and spouse, you've got X amount of dollars coming in every single month and you get paid twice a month. What we want to do is we want to create a job description for every single dollar that comes in. Now, the last thing I want to do is to have you fill up an envelope and you get to use that envelope money, you know, once the money's out of that envelope for this specific thing, it's just done.
Yeah.
I'm a big believer in enjoying life, and there's nothing worse than being a Scrooge and hating life because that just makes everything miserable. So what I would do is I would say, okay, so let's say for easy math, you're getting paid, I don't know, $3,000 each paycheck. So twice a month, you're getting $3,000. I would say, and let's say $2,000 of that $3,000. So let me write that down. So you're making $6,000 a month, and let's say $2,000 of that is like your basic bills, your rent, your car, your insurance, whatever. Let's make it $2,500. As I'm making numbers up, so you're making $6,000. We got $2,500 in expenses, and okay, so you got $3,500 left over. So I would say, at the very beginning of the month, or go to your bank and establish three different accounts at your bank. So essentially a checking account, just whatever account you want. A second checking account that's your bills and payments account. And then a third account that's your savings account. And what I would help people do is I would basically help them create a flow of money in it. So I would say, okay, let's say we want to save $1,500 every single month out of that $6,000. So whenever a paycheck hits, they would move $750. You can set that up automatically with your bank, or you can do it on your own. They would move $750 over into that savings account immediately before they do anything else. You pay yourself first, always. You get paid before any other bill because you are a bill. They would save that $1,500. And then they would move $1,250 over into their bills and payments account each pay run. Now, you can do that a little bit differently. Like what Tamara and I do is we pay all of our bills off of my first paycheck every month. So everything's paid for after the first paycheck. So the second paycheck is just all savings and like discretionary spending. So they would move the $1,250 over into the bills and payments so that all of your bills and payments come out of that one account. There's nothing worse. I would hear people say this all the time. They're like, wow, I'm scared to look at my bank account because of like what's come out. I'm like, no. You should never be in that situation. You should already have that money allocated no matter what time of the month that bill is coming out to a separate account. So you already know it's gone. And then the remainder of the money goes into your checking account, which is the money that you spend. Now, I don't care if you spend it out of your checking account. I don't care if you put it on a credit card and pay it off every single month if you're responsible. But that way, what you've done is you've created a job description for every single dollar. So what's left over, it doesn't matter if you've got, you know, if you buy $501 Starbucks cups of coffee or you buy one $500 golf club, as long as it's within that amount of money that's left over, you're fine. So it gives people the flexibility and the freedom to actually enjoy life instead of putting themselves in these tiny little boxes to force themselves to say, okay, well, this much is set aside for eating out. Well, you know what? Some months we might want to go eat out more than other months. Some months I might want to go golfing more than I do in December when it's 32 degrees outside. Okay. So again, it's contextualizing that and then even going deeper, like for example, that savings account money, out of that account, we move money into investments. Okay. So we build up that amount until I would suggest at least 6 months worth of expenses to where you've got a nice cushion. And then past that point, let's say, you know, that $1,500 comes in every month and then you take $1,000 and move it into whatever form of investment you want to move it into. So you're still building up that liquid cash savings a little bit to keep building that nest egg, but then you're also repositioning things and the things that are going to make you more money. So did all of that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, it definitely made sense. I think way too many people, I kind of have the same thought when it comes to, and we've talked about this, I'm sure it's probably a conversation better for another time when it comes to like late in life retirement. I would rather have a less amount of money in my retirement account, but have money coming in than just have one big lump sum and watch money deplete from it every day. It's a sort of the same. I kind of make a comparison there to bank accounts. Like if all you have is your one checking and mm-hmm. all you do is just see money leave, you're not really that aware or cognizant of where the money's going or what it's going to. And you don't feel that freedom. You may have a good amount of money, but you might be like, oh yeah, my cable internet bill comes in on like next week and that's $140. I need to make sure I still have that in this account by that date. And it's always going to be in the back of your mind and you're always going to be stressing about it. So it definitely makes sense. It's way more of a mentality change than it is anything.
Correct. And the mentality that most people are in is paycheck to paycheck. Most Americans live paycheck to paycheck.
Yeah.
Most Americans don't know how to save at all. I mean, it's slightly terrifying. And I think a lot of that has to do to the fact that most people hate the idea of the gurus teaching budgeting. Because, dude, if I have to fill up a freaking envelope on how many meals I can have this month at a restaurant, I might jump off a cliff. That sounds like the most miserable experience ever. Now, for some people in the most extreme cases, like maybe that's what you need to get back on track. Maybe that's it. I don't think most people are in that situation. I think what most people do, if we talk about the meaty part of the bell curve, what most people need is just the clarity around, again, giving their dollars a job description. And again, this is simple. Go to your bank. You have your checking account. Open up a second account. Give it the nickname bills and payments. And then open up a savings account. And have your checks deposited into your checking account. First sweep goes into the savings. Second sweep goes into the bills and payments. And then the third. And then what's left over is left over. You like now you know what you've got budgeted and allocated to spend. And then if there's some left over at the end of the month in the fun account, you know what happens? It gets to roll over to the next month. So, or send that into savings if, you know, some people just love seeing their savings account grow, which is fine. But again, I want people to start thinking about, and some lessons will be a little more complex in the future. But once you fill up that savings and you feel like you can weather any storm, okay, now how can I be strategic about creating more flow? It's not about lowering expenses. I hate that crap. It's not about lowering expenses. Live within your means. But But it's not about lowering expenses. It's about increasing revenue. How do you take that money that's going into your savings and put it into things that are actively going to put more money into that checking every single month to where you have a bigger pie to distribute on the back end? That's the goal.
Yeah.
Again, sometimes I hear people saying, well, I just want to get to a point where my bills are so low that I can retire. I'm like, that's the wrong mindset. And I've heard that a lot.
How many people do you know that or have heard of that are retired or wherever they are in life, and the most that they have in retirement is like very modest, and maybe they like modest, but very modest, meager lifestyle because they just have one amount in their bank account and they are terrified that they're going to run out of their money. And so they're living, I know people, I come from a very small hometown, decent amount of like poverty and people just not doing too well. There's a lot of older people who've put in time, hard worked all their life, but they wind up living in like tiny, crappy little apartments, desperate and terrified that their electric bill might go up. And it's just because they didn't plan appropriately. And they think way more about living low cost so my money doesn't run out rather than what can I be doing to generate more.
Well, and here's another thing. How often do you hear people say, well, when you're in retirement, you're on a fixed income?
Oh, all the time.
It's the most stupid statement I've ever heard. You're on a fixed income right now. Yeah. Your salary is your fixed income. The difference is not your fixed income. The difference is your lack of earning potential. That's the difference.
Yeah.
Because now you're looking at a pot that's going down. That's why I tell people, I'm not telling you not to have a pot. I'm telling you that you need to have other assets that are going to contribute to that pot. Because if the only thing you have, because when you retire, what most people have is they've got a 401k and an IRA, two pots, and they have Social Security, which is the one thing putting money into the pot. So they're pulling out of two pots and they have one thing putting back into the pot. And the one thing putting back into the pot is nowhere near enough to replace what's being pulled out. So now make yourself 67 years old and you are watching your entire life savings go down every single year. What kind of anxiety does that put into your life?
Yeah. I think about it this way too, is like, think of you're close to retirement, you're a parent, you're a grandparent. How many times have you heard people's parents or grandparents say, well, I just hope there's something left for you when I die.
Yeah.
And it comes from that same level of fear of that, oh, fixed income. Once I get to retirement, that's all my money. If a crazy medical bill comes up, if X, Y, or Z comes up, there goes all of it. And I've thought many times before, I would much rather be in a position where I have, like, let's say $30,000 in the bank, but I know that $1,500 extra from passive investments or whatever is incoming into my bank account every single month than just having $200,000 or maybe even $300,000 just in the bank if I'm just going to sit on it and watch it go away and watch it dwindle. I would rather have a less amount of total money if I know money's coming in every time.
Well, and the finance industry has done a great disservice to Americans, some to their own fault, some not so much because it is a complex topic. But for example, the 4% rule. So do you know what the 4% rule is in retirement?
I think I did at one point, but I think I totally forgot it.
Okay. So the 4% rule basically states you can withdraw, it's like a rule of thumb. You can withdraw up to 4% of your total assets, and that should allow for you to live off of it, replace, yada, 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 keep growing, et cetera, et cetera. That doesn't work. I don't know if people have noticed, but interest rates have been at record lows for like 15 years at this point, and they don't seem to be trending up anytime soon. So 4% is like, that is exponentially more than what you're going to be able to get. I mean, as of this morning, if we want to talk about, for example, muni bonds, they're trading at 0.7%. I also want you to think about this. 4% of a million is $40,000. So you have a million set aside, and that's spitting off $40,000 for you a year if you're using the 4% rule.
Yeah.
That is terrifying.
And that's assuming you're getting a rate that you realistically probably will never be able to get.
Correct. And we just veered off into retirement, which again, that's a whole nother podcast. So maybe people can get, I can talk about strategies at that point. But the other thing I wanted to make sure we covered was debt and paying off debt. Mm-hmm. So I am again, back to cash flow. I care about how does it impact your cash flow? I want to know, depending on what you've borrowed, how much is it impacting your bottom line every single month? So here's what I mean by that. So let's say you have a mortgage, and let's say that mortgage is $360,000. Your monthly payment on that is going to be about $1,800 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what I love using is what's called the cash flow index. Again, did not come up with this. Which it basically states, if you take the principal sum that you owe, okay, and you divide the monthly payment by that, what is the number that it comes out to? So if you take $360,000 divided by $1,800 a month, your number is 200. Now, if we take, let's say, a credit card, and let's say you have $5,500 in that credit card, and let's say we divide that by $200 a month, your number is 27.5 on that. And then let's say we have a car that's $26,000 and the payment is $400 a month. Your number on that is 65. When you get that number, if that number is between 0 and 50, that debt is a cash hog. It has taken a substantial amount of monthly cash flow away from you relative to the amount of money you have leveraged for that debt. Okay. If that number is between 50 and 100, you're approaching the danger zone, but it's not terrible. If it's over 100, it's an incredibly efficient loan. So think about the mortgage scenario for that. You have a $360,000 piece of real estate that you have control over. You don't own it because there's a lien against it, but the bank doesn't own your money either. That doesn't mean they can't make money off of it. I can rent that place. I can refinance that place and pull money out. I can sell it for profit. I can tear down a wall if I want to. There's a million different things I can do with it because I control it. And I got $360,000 that would have taken me forever to save up for $1,800 a month. That credit card, it's $5,500. It's a $200 a month payment. I have leveraged $5,500. So that's $345,000 less than my house for a payment that's 9 times smaller than my house payment. You know, 4,500 times 9 is not 360. Think about the difference in the amount of leverage you've created. And not to speak of that with the credit card debt, there's no asset associated. It's consumer debt. Yeah. So when I tell people, how do you create a strategy around what to pay off the lowest number that comes out on that index. If you've got a payday loan that you borrow $1,200 on, I mean, think about this. Let's do the math on that. So let's say it's $1,200 and, you know, you're paying $135 a month on it. I mean, the score there is 8.8. Every single extra dollar you have that you can allocate towards paying off debt should be sent to that, because the moment you pay off that inefficient loan, it opens up exponentially more cash flow to reposition into other debt. Now, that also means there's no way on God's green earth you're going to get me to pay off my mortgage quickly. I'm not doing it. Now, I understand that's an emotional thing. Some people just feel good paying off a mortgage. I'm not doing it. Not quickly. I'm going to leverage money into other areas where I'm going to strategically position dollars to make me more dollars. But when I've got a mortgage for 360 and I'm paying 1800, that's essentially free money to me. I am beating inflation because my interest rate is lower what inflation is going to be over the next 30 years.
Yeah.
So I'll stop there. Again, I did a lot of talking. You're the one listening and thinking and comments, questions. Like what would people be thinking through as they're listening to this?
Well, I just heard that everyone, no matter what their financial situation is, should buy at least 5 houses tomorrow.
Yep. All on interest only 5-year ARMs.
Yeah, because we learned nothing from the housing crisis at all.
Nope.
No, I think, honestly, I think if you could real quick just list that calculation one more time, because I think anybody listening right now after hearing your examples would probably be at least somewhat interested in doing that calculus for the various debt that they have in their life.
Okay. So to get the index, you take whatever you owe, so the principal amount, which the principal amount is whatever debt you have outstanding, and divide that by the minimum payment.
Okay.
So again, you would take 360 and divide that by 1800, my example, and that gives you a score of 200. Yeah. If your score is over 100, that's an incredibly efficient loan. If your score is under 50, you're in the danger zone. If you're 50 to 100, be cautious.
Okay.
This should also help you calculate, like, is a loan I'm getting offered a good thing or a bad thing?
Yeah.
So let me go on the loan spiel real quick. I hate when people say all debt is bad. That's a load of crap. I especially hate when people say all debt is bad when they're using tools, radio stations, TV stations, whatever, that are financed by debt.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not trying to hear it.
Yeah, there's very few businesses that just outright, even if they're financial planning businesses, that tell you debt is bad, that will pay for their office building or whatever they need all in cash.
Correct. The reason let me explain this to all the who speak in extremes. The reason we have a robust middle class, the reason you and I are not living in a freaking cottage and circling our wagons in Oregon, the reason we are able to have advancements in technology, to be able to buy homes, to be able to buy cars, is because debt can be utilized as a strategic tool. Debt allows for us to leverage.
Yeah.
People think leverage is a bad term. No, leverage can be having, you know, five assistants that are doing tasks that you're not good at doing, so you can focus on revenue generating tasks. So debt used appropriately is a wonderful tool that has allowed for our society to prosper. The access of easy capital has made a dramatic change in the last 150 years in society. Now, again, let me clarify, you going and blowing 10 grand on a credit card, that's a terrible idea. Consumer debt is stupid. Don't do that. Debt that does not create money for you is stupid. Don't do that. That $360,000 house with the $1,800 a month mortgage, all in with property management, would cost $2,000 to be rented for $3,000. That's a $1,000 profit. Okay, so leveraging debt to create $1,000 every single month is different than blowing all your money on a vacation to Aruba on your Capital One that now you're a slave to. As always on the podcast, it's about nuance. You have to think for yourself. Think, how can I make my position better in the long term? Always think that way.
I mean, I think a lot of people too get into the trap where they have like half your mentality. They see that they see the value of debt. They're like, listen, like I can get something I normally would not be able to get by going into debt on it, which isn't in and of itself a bad thing. But however, they kind of take that to the extreme, like you said, and they start swiping that credit card for every single thing, only making the minimum payments. And that's how you wind up with the stories of people who have like 20 different credit cards with various amounts on each. I owe $3,000 on this, $5,000 on this. I just paid off my $3,000 credit card with one that I have $8,000 on. And it's, they don't think of the second part of that. And then you have the opposite, which I find pretty interesting too. You have people who are petrified of any sort of debt ever. They spend the first like 5 to 10 years right out of college paying off every single penny of their student loan because they hate debt so much. But then at the end of that 10 years, they're still living in a crappy place and their savings account has hardly anything in it at all. And it's kind of like they're back at square one, regardless. And so those are the extremes. And obviously, like you said, we're talking about people in the bell curve here. But yeah, it is kind of interesting how people will do both of those, but do it to the extreme and go in the wrong direction. Debt isn't bad. It's a tool to be used, but it's also something that can be easily abused or done so poorly that you would have been better off not entering into it.
Correct. So again, to make it clear, I'm not talking to the individual who has to avoid going to the bar in order not to be an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Okay. Like if you can't have a credit card without maxing it out within a month, you need to go stuff envelopes and you need to chop everything up and you need to go live in a cave somewhere for a while until you pay everything off.
Yeah.
Like again, I'm talking about the meaty part of the bell curve, the middle. All right. That's the folks who I want to help think through things. And again, I'm not a genius. I'm not right at every single thing. I'm just sharing with you some of the observations that I've seen over the years and things that I've seen work over and over and over again. So to review, giving your dollars a job description works. I've seen it work over and over and over again. I have seen so much peace come. I mean, I'll give you an example. Couples would argue about crap all the time that they're spending. And I would say, hey, how about this? If you're buying a Starbucks cup of coffee for I don't know, let's just say it's a dollar. I know it's not, but let's say it's a dollar. Would you call your husband or wife to ask them if it was okay to buy that? No. Everybody's like, no, I wouldn't buy it. I wouldn't have it. It's like, okay, well, what about if you went and bought a $500 item? You might not ask for permission or have to ask, but like, it'll probably at least be a conversation piece, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sometimes people just have different purchasing styles. Some couples, one spouse wants to buy a whole bunch of little crap and the other one wants to just buy a whole bunch of big crap. And then that ends up in arguments and conflict. And we all know that money is one of the biggest stressors in marriage.
And you have different values. One person sees one expense as being not a big deal at all, whereas the other person says, why would you ever spend on that?
Correct. So a thing that I would do there is I would say, hey, we have our joint checking account, but then let's peel off $500 apiece into our living, like individual, you know, live life accounts. Mm-hmm. And you've got that $500. You can spend it on whatever you want. No guilt, no questions asked. If something's left over, it rolls over to the next one. And then obviously you have your joint ones. But even something as simple as that is just separating that out to where the guilt factor is taken away is huge, because all of a sudden the person that's spending $501 cups of coffee doesn't feel guilty because it's within that $500 budget. Yeah. And the one person spending, you know, $300 on a Nintendo Switch, $100 on games, and then, you know, has $100 left over doesn't feel guilty because it's in that section. Again, if you give your dollars a job description, everything becomes easier.
Yeah.
And then obviously, like I said, on debt isn't inherently evil. Debt can be utilized for both good, aka the last 100 years of human development, or it can be utilized for evil.
Yeah.
And utilizing the index of taking your principal, dividing it by your monthly payment, and figuring out where does it fall from a cash hog standpoint. Always, always, always. How do we increase cash flow coming in every single month into our household? Yeah. I'll give you the final word.
Oh, that's a lot of pressure. I mean, honestly, I think like you said, I mean, we've both read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and the mm-hmm. book says a lot of stuff. But at the end of the day, the main message is you have to change the way you think about money. And I think that's a good start to this first episode. Are you calling them episodes? Series?
Yeah. Episode within a series. Sure.
Something. Well, I'm sure you'll workshop that. But I think that's a good start, is you have to change how you think about things. If you're the type of person who's really leery about any sort of debt, you got to maybe start thinking a little bit differently and thinking maybe there's more to it than that. Or if you're the type of person who thinks using a credit card for everything and only making the minimum payments on it till the day you die, you may want to think a little bit differently there too. So I think the mentality shift is a big part of this, and a good first point to touch on for this series of videos.
Boom. I love it. Thanks for coming on, Adam.
Wait, this is the part where you have to say, like, hit the notification bell and like the video.
Oh, yeah, smash the button or whatever. Yeah, we don't even have a YouTube channel yet.
We don't even know the terminology. We're terrible.
Smash the – we're going to have the chopped video editing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about, where it's like,
It just hard cuts.
Oh, just man.
Nothing but hard cuts.
But, hey, you want to – fun fact, everybody, you want to know why they edit that way? It's a psychological trick. It's basically the equivalent of like scrolling through Instagram.
Oh, yeah. Because like every scene is like slightly different.
Yep. It keeps your brain engaged and keeps you addicted. It is. I'm actually reading a book right now that we're going to do a book club episode on called Irresistible, which mm-hmm. is all about how technology, you know, keeps us hooked. So there's a whole bunch of fun stuff we can have on that side.
Next episode, slot machines and why you should always play them.
All the time. Again, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate
you. No problem.
Especially being part of my little experiment. For everybody, manhoodpod.com. As always, you know, if you've got complaints, or not complaints, you don't have complaints. You have constructive criticism, folks. Those are complaints with a solution. That's the only criticism we take. But yeah, outside of that, we look forward to talking to you guys soon.